This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Good health starts with seeing the whole picture and everyone in it. It's why Rutgers Health has dedicated billions of dollars in research to solve some of the greatest challenges and address inequities. From prenatal care to childhood illness to cardiovascular disease, we're leading the research that's improving lives. Rutgers Health, because all people deserve good health.
Ram trucks have always powered American freedom. Now with our Freedom of Choice pricing program, you can choose your offer, cash incentives, or employee pricing for all. Hurry into your local dealer today for details, because nothing stops America and nothing stops Ram. Offer valid on select 2024 and 2025 Rams for non-FCA employees and retirees. $200 admin fee applies. Not all buyers and lessees will qualify. Restrictions apply. Not combinable with other offers. Ends 4/30/25. Ram is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for the next in our series of draft countdown shows. Tonight, we're looking at the safeties, fairly deep class of safeties here. A lot to look at. Joining me to talk about them is Kevin Ostreicher. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. Seems like the draft has really snuck up on us this year. At least it feels like it has for me. We're less than 3 weeks out as we're recording this, and a lot of interesting needs for the Ravens, operating from a place, though, where they could go in a bunch of different directions, not only in the first round, but you talk about all 3 days. A lot of variation that could happen.
Yeah, very. They've done a very good job of not having a specific high need. I think that actually hurt them last year, even with the very deep group of tackles. They were frankly lucky to get Rosengarten in round two when they did. They had to kind of reach to get him, I think, relative to values a lot of people would put on him. Not everybody, but a lot of people would put on him. And I think that, it wasn't an ideal situation. We kind of knew it wasn't an ideal situation as soon as Joe Alt was drafted, honestly, at number 5 by the Chargers. But this season, very balanced set of needs across the board, a lot of positions. I think it's a position of strength they can draft from. I think it might be a position of strength they can trade from as well. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, a lot of different ways. And I know a lot of people this year with 11 draft picks might be calling for Baltimore to trade up if there's a guy that sneaks his way into the early 20s. Obviously, we know the Ravens draft strategy, Eric DaCosta's draft strategy. They like to have as many swings as possible. Take as many swings as you can. You're bound to hit on some. And we have certainly seen, especially back in 2022 when they had 6 fourth round picks, people were saying, oh, they might trade out of one of those spots, condense a couple of those picks, move up and get somebody, maybe end that round with 4. They took all 6, and some of them hit, some of them didn't, but a sound strategy that's worked out for them for the most part.
Yeah, and the funny thing about this is people are narrative builders naturally, so they want to say that DaCosta has a lousy record of late round picks. It's not true. I mean, it's just not true. It's patently not true. Or that the Ravens generally have. The Ravens have had some trouble hitting on 7th round picks, but even that narrative has kind of ended the last few years. The MVP of the Miami Dolphins was Zach Sealer this year, the Ravens' 7th round pick in 2018. Geno Stone, of course, had a huge year last year as a 7th round pick, and Voorhees is posed to start as a 7th round pick from a couple of years ago that the Ravens took because of injury purposes, were able to get an economical pick out of.
Yeah. The big one, I think, is people have kind of bashed EDC for the 5th round over the last handful of seasons, where that has been guys like Caillou Blukelly, Ben Mason, guys who haven't even seen the roster after being drafted. Just a couple months later, they're gone. 4th round, he's had some hits, but overall, I think it's been a very fruitful. I just think that people look back on his first draft in 2019, a lot of misses in that draft overall compared to what he has done over the last handful of seasons. I think he certainly redeemed himself with, I think, 2022 being at the forefront of that.
Yeah, and Marquise Brown, Justice Hill, Ben Powers were good players from that draft. Jalen Ferguson probably was not going to amount to all that much. Unfortunately, he died. Obviously, that was terrible. Miles Boykin, a good run blocker, but they did end up, in the last 3 picks looked pretty bad that year. Amon Marshall, Daylon Mack, and Trace McSorley were not players that helped the team, but came back with a huge draft in 2020, a abbreviated draft in 2021 that was still pretty damn good in terms of the players they got, honestly. You know, even getting Tylan Wallace, you'd have to look at now as being pretty good. A great draft in 22. 23, we don't know entirely yet. There's still some hope for that draft with Simpson and Robinson and Voorhees in particular. Their outcome's not known. But anyway, I think we have to be pretty happy, obviously, with the history of Ravens draft picks, because they've been undeniably one of the three best teams in drafting relative to value that they have, along with Green Bay and Pittsburgh. But also in just that DaCosta has not really been a big drop off from Ozzie. I think they those guys were so intertwined in their thought and whatnot, and they're still both there the same way that both guys were still there for the entire 25-year history of the franchise. It's been a remarkable continuity at the position. No other organization really has it.
Yeah, it's been incredible, because you're right. Intertwined is a great word to use, because sharing the same values for all of those years, and it works so well with Ozzie for so many years, going away from that would have been foolish. Obviously, EDC puts his own spin on it. Ozzie is still there to give his input, as is all the other guys in that room. But for what the Ravens have, obviously, you have certain pipelines as well. Alabama was the big one, not Oklahoma, Michigan with the Harbaugh connection. But they also like to dive into that small school pool. They've kind of gotten away from it in recent
less
seasons.
Of it, yeah.
But obviously they've had some success in that regard as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk safety here. The Ravens situation here became very dire in the middle of last year. And the Ravens did, frankly, an amazing job of fixing it on the fly. Credit to the organization from top to bottom, but certainly to Harbaugh, to Orr, and to Kyle Hamilton and Ardarius Washington for being able to step in on the back end and pick up roles that were not theirs to start the season. But Marcus Williams and A.J. Jackson are gone after disastrous seasons. Kyle Hamilton, Ardarius Washington are back. They are among the most Ravens versatile defenders, and I think that the Ravens probably would like to see both of them have the opportunity to come up and play some slot corner. I don't know where the Ravens are actually on having Ardarius play the back end specifically. I kind of think he's still a little small to play it. I don't think it's an optimal position for him. I definitely don't think it's optimal to have it be the only position where you line up Kyle Hamilton.
I agree. And I think that last year, again, their situation was they had to act out of that desperation. And it was a last gasp effort to say, this is all that we have left. Because essentially you come into the year expecting big things from Marcus, and then obviously with Eddie Jackson, and it just didn't pan out either way. Now, I think one handled it better than the other, but regardless, both of them were non-factors by the time the season ended. So ideally, this essentially can become a reset off season where you can move Hamilton around a lot more. Washington, I think the same thing. You also can factor in, does Sanusi K make an impact beyond special teams this upcoming year? He was great in that regard, but do they see a bigger role for him? Is Bo Braid going to factor in 2025? That's another question, but you have an opportunity to add a couple of guys in the draft, maybe one, maybe two, that can allow your stars like Kyle Hamilton, and you know, if you feel like Ardarius Washington is going to play a big role for them, which I think that he will, you can move those guys around, give them flexibility, which obviously is king in this Ravens defense.
Yeah, and Kane and Braid, you mentioned both key special teams players, particularly Kane. I think he could potentially get the C patch this year. I guess it's probably going to go to Jake Hummel because he's got a little more seniority. Sure. But soon enough, Kane could be the captain of special teams for a year or for more. He's a guy I think who will be back for sure. Braid, I'm not as sure. Neither of them showed a propensity to play anything but a dime back role, as far as I'm concerned. They're shallow zone defenders. They're not guys who you really would feel comfortable with on the back end. I guess that could change, but neither of them were that guy in college. And I think the Ravens' need is actually very specific. They need a free safety, period, in a full stop here. Do not want a versatile safety. Don't need a play everything all at once, you know, utility knife, Swiss Army knife kind of guy. They need a free safety. They need a guy who can play that position, play it well. And you'll get the best economy if you draft a guy who's only a free safety. It's going to sound kind of funny when I get to the guy I really like in this draft, but they need an emergency free safety, even if they stick with Hamilton or some combination of Hamilton and Washington playing the back end. They need an emergency guy who can step in and be a split field guy. And they also need one, not for emergencies, just for third down, for obvious passing downs, for protecting a lead. The other thing, they need a dime back in case Simpson does not work out as a third down player. And I think the interesting thing about all the stuff Harbaugh has said this offseason about Simpson is that he said Simpson will be in there for running downs at least or something. There was the wording was like that. It's immediately my ears perk up on that. And I think, well, this is a team that's going to play more dime this year. And if they're going to, and it makes all kinds of sense, that means Hamilton coming up, or it means Kane in there, or it means somebody else, some other safety type, or perhaps another linebacker who covers well. The linebacker show, by the way, is the next one coming up after this. So folks will tune in for that because a lot of guys in there have some of those characteristics. But anyway, they have a need for multiple safeties. And I think, you know, they're probably going to have to get players at safety who can not only play special teams, because that's a core requirement of any young safety, but also can fulfill a defensive role. And that's where I think both Kane and Braid to different degrees have kind of fallen short. They're not really ready to take on an obvious defensive role on the team.
Yeah, and you have 11 picks. So if you want to use, if let's just say they end the draft with 11, two of those being safeties wouldn't shock me at all. I just think that people see Hamilton and Ardarius Washington and just say, oh, well, they already have these two guys. So they only need to add one in the later rounds. I don't view it that way because there's a lot more that goes into it than that. Plus, I think that, again, what makes Kyle Hamilton so dangerous is the ability, like, you don't want him playing on the back end full time. You want to move him around like you were able to because, yes, he did an outstanding job kind of being thrust into that role the second half of last season. But that's not where you want him ideally. It reminded me of what the Steelers had to do with Minkah Fitzpatrick a couple of years ago where they ran out of options. And obviously Minkah can be a roam around, do it all safety, but they had to just stick him in the back end and that limited some of what he could do. And so for Ardarius, and again, I just think it varies, you know, how much people either view him as a full-time option in the back end or whether they want him to move around a little bit more. It still will give the Ravens other opportunities because what Marcus Williams, when he was playing well, that first part of his first year when he wasn't injured, one of the things that he did so well was be that ball hawk. You can put him in single high. You can trust him to cover the back end of that defense. And, you know, we talk about Earl Thomas off the field, but on the field, Earl did that really well for the Ravens in 2019 too. Like having a player like that, you can rely on and lets everybody else move around. You mentioned dime. You can play guys up. That's really important. So if they come out of the draft with a full guy that can play in the back end, that single high guy, and maybe a mid-round dime backer, I think that's a successful way to address the position if you're Baltimore.
Yeah, they could do it. There's, you know, the dime back, I'm going to give you the analogous position for the Ravens right now is slot corner. And the reason I say that is the Ravens have gone through this offseason, they haven't addressed slot corner. In fact, they cut Arthur Maulet. They haven't yet addressed safety to free up a guy to move up the slot corner. But the three most versatile guys on the team, the three most versatile defensive backs can all play some slot. And those are the two safeties we already mentioned, and also Humphrey, who's perfectly capable of moving to slot if that's where you need him. But each one of those players is already accounted for as a primary at another position. Humphrey on the outside and Hamilton and Washington, of course, on the back end. But the Ravens haven't chosen yet to address that slot corner, and they can address it last. Same thing goes with the dime back position. As soon as they find the other free safety that they need or the other split field guy who can play the back end, provide some turnover production, provide real ball skills back there, you know, loose bracket coverage, all the things that they got from a Geno Stone, who is not an out of this world ball player, but he was legitimately a ball hawk, you know, particularly right in the Ravens defense. Then the other positions will start to fix themselves. And the safety position rolls over into that inside linebacker and corner depth. Yeah. On this Ravens team, and they really need to figure it out from here. But the Ravens, I think, are trying to solve the problem with the right fix first. And the very right fix first is either another great outside corner who's going to allow Humphrey to bump inside of the slot, or another free safety who can legitimately play that position and be left alone back there, which will allow Washington, Hamilton, whatever combination they want, to come up and play closer to the line of scrimmage.
I think safety is one of the most intriguing positions on an NFL roster right now because of what you just mentioned, where all these guys can move around and some profile to play more slot than others. Others profile to play more as a dime than others. Others can play in the back end. Others are more strong safety types just in general. Like, I think the way that we evaluate the safety position versatility has crept its way into that conversation over the last handful of seasons, to where obviously Ardarius played like free safety in college. He was the guy that was roaming the middle of the field, but then he came in and obviously he dropped in the draft due to his size. And everyone's like, okay, does he fit more as a nickel corner, where the Ravens initially had him playing? And then they put him at safety because they had to. Now there are questions about where his full-time role is, but there are so many different ways that these safeties can go. And it's not just with the mid-round draft picks, late-round draft picks. I mean, you have the name of the game for guys like Kyle Hamilton, Fitzpatrick, et cetera. You move these guys, Derwin James, all these guys move around on the field. So it is very skill set specific, where for some positions you can just say, okay, X, Y, Z, this is where they're going to play because we know they're going to line up here. Right. Sometimes you don't know where these guys are going to line up, and that's what intrigues me about safety.
Yeah, it definitely. It's bailed the Steelers out in a lot of ways to have, I'm forgetting his name now, Elliott on the back end, who's been a guy, legitimately not a ball hawk, even though he had some interceptions in his final year in college. But he's ended up being a guy that's been one of the most sure tacklers in the NFL. And with the safeties inside linebacker combination being what it is now with Queen and Malik Harrison, they desperately need him to be a cleanup guy. I mean, he really helped him out last year. Huge stop to miss tackle rate. I think he only missed two tackles the whole season. Had something like 25 stops. So that'll be one of the signature statistics we look at as we go through this, along with some coverage statistics. I'll have that for every player that we talk about. I hope we, unless you name a safety that I didn't even look at, which is certainly possible. But tell you what, Kevin, let's jump right into it with your number 10 guy.
Yep. So I have Jonas Sanker of Virginia at number 10. And how I approach this is I'm just going to assume that the Ravens are going to take two safeties, one to be a like roam around player, the other to be more of a dime guy. I think for Sanker, he's someone that intrigues me as a later round draft pick for a couple of different reasons. I know that the Ravens don't need a ton more special teams guys at safety, but again, as we talked about earlier, that's kind of how some of these late round picks make their bread and butters. And Sanker has a lot of anticipation that he uses, at least what I saw. He's very technical in his movements and just what he does in general. He's very good at interrupting routes. He's able to flow to the football really well. And to me, I think he's a physical player in terms of the tackling style that he uses. But when you talk about some of the weaknesses, he has some athletic limitations that start to pop up when he's matched up against speed guys, vertical guys that can get him into some trouble. He can sometimes, I mentioned physically, be a little over aggressive at times, which I've noticed. So I think that he's someone that fits the profile of a day three pick for Baltimore. But I think there's a way, like we saw with Sanusi Kane and Bo Braid last year, he could stick on this roster. It's just a matter of, do the Ravens have enough of a certain specific skill set that Sanker already offers?
Sanker is number 11 on my list, my first honorable mention. So you'll see him posted number 11 on draft day when we're going through this. And by the way, Kevin will be joining us at some point on day two for a slug of time here. We're looking forward to a great draft party. I hope you'll join us for that. But Jonas has a really good size speed combination. His stops to miss tackle ratio is pretty good at 22.4, 31 and 13, career 81 and 33, 10.6% missed tackle rate. That's right in the middle. It's right in the middle for a safety. There's some better. There's a whole bunch in this draft that are worse. And we're going to talk about some of that. Yards per target were 6.7 last year, career 7.4. His opposition passer rating 87.6 last year, 98.6 career. Those figures are just fine. In fact, the yards per target figure is good. And I'd say the passer rating is average for a draftable NFL safety. But not, you know, certainly not bad at all. Only had four penalties and 1,233 college coverage snaps. If you look at the tape of Sanker, one of the things you'll see is he's moving people around. He's a very natural leader of the secondary for Virginia. That's not atypical of your top 10 draftable players at either corner or safety. That would be true, but it's nice to see that Sanker's a natural kind of a communicator on the field. I saw some of the same things you do, and the big reason he dropped to number 11 for me, because I thought he was ahead in a lot of other ways, was that he goes against the Ravens' need for a pure free safety ball hawk, has kind of middling ball production, two interceptions, 17 passes defense. On the other hand, he has four forced fumbles and five fumble recoveries in 43 college games. So you might get some turnover production another way, more like Deshaun Elliott in that way, by the way, much more like Deshaun Elliott. He could be a good, strong safety for some team that's going to love him more than I do. But the Ravens need a free safety. If the Ravens take him, I think it's an indication that they can mold. They think they can mold him into something that he currently isn't, and they might be successful with him. They never really got Elliott to be a truly successful back end guy. One of the things about Deshaun Elliott, as good as he is now, is that he would always go to the midsection. He was never comfortable being a loose bracket player, looking for the spare change to be picked up, the overthrow, the interception. I think for a free safety, for anybody's playing a bracket back there, you got two primary roles. One is make the quarterback afraid to throw the ball anywhere near you. And number two is when the ball is coming in and you have help underneath the play, try and be loose over the top and look for the overthrow. And Ed Reed, of course, was exactly that way. He was a center fielder in terms of knowing exactly where he wanted to play. And that worked out well. In a lot of ways, that's exactly what the Ravens need. I think he's probably a better player than, well, I'll wait to talk about the other two guys. I think he's better than both of whom look like NFL strong safeties only to me that had to fall out of my top 10. But I think of the guys who looks like he's just a strong safety, Sanker would be my guy at number 11.
Yeah. And I think that it was hard because I love the players, but then you also have to factor in where do they fit with what the Ravens already have personnel wise and what do they need? So I would have been comfortable moving Sanker up a couple of spots, but I feel like, again, I'm prioritizing the ball hawk first and then more of a mid-round dime guy that they could use. I have Sanker more on that second tier. So while I think he'll be a great player, like I think that a team, like you said, that can use him the way that he like needs to be used can get there. I just don't know if that spot is on the Ravens. I wouldn't be mad if they took him, but I just think that they need to prioritize the ball hawk skill set first.
Yep, completely agree. All right, let me move on to my number 10 guy because I think he fits that need more than Sanker does. And it's the only reason I have him ahead of him because he's got other physical limitations. And that's Malachi Moore of Alabama, who I think the Ravens could draft probably round 6 or round 7 and have really good value for. He's not that high on other people's big boards necessarily. And some of the physical limitations come. He's 5'11", 196. It's a little small. The Ravens have smaller playing back there right now, obviously, in Ardarius Washington. A 4.5 40 guy as measured by John Other. So we don't know if we really believe that or not. And here's the big one, 29 5/8 inch arms. That's extremely short. That's the kind of arm length you see in a 5'8", 5'9 slot corner. It's exceptionally short. He'll be 24 in September. So there's an age question as well. Of course, when you're talking about a 6th or 7th round pick, you probably are only talking about a one contract player anyway. Anything you get is gravy beyond that. You don't have to worry too much about getting a two contract player like you would on day one or day two with your picks there. He is small but fast if the 40 time can be believed, I'll say. Where he shines is on some of the coverage metrics and on some of the nice stop totals. So you wouldn't figure a guy that size would be a good tackler, but he had a 20-5 stops to miss tackle ratio, 4.0 to 1, which is exceptionally high. There are a few higher than this draft, but that's very good. Career 76-29, so 2.5 to 1, a little higher than 2.5 to 1. Only a 6.8% missed tackle rate in 24 was an enormous improvement over 12.0% in his career. Sometimes I figure out like what the previous years were. I got lazier here apparently and just had his career value, so it would be higher than 12% in the earlier years. Regardless of that, I expect tackling to be his weakness in the NFL. That'll be the factor which kind of decides if he can hang and be a regular in the NFL or even a sub-package guy will be whether or not he can handle the tackling responsibilities at the back end. Instincts, ability to read the QB from the back end are outstanding. What I thought was not as good was I think he's underutilized as slot corner where he doesn't really have the ideal length to reach across the play. A lot of the times you have to do from that position. I didn't see a 3-cone on him. I don't know what his change of direction skills are really like, other than to say he didn't have tremendous success at slot corner. I think he's miscast there. Another guy who's a natural leader, communicator when lining up at nickel, like to see that as well. He had a head injury in 2024. Something to keep an eye on. He had some other missed games despite having 3,121 college snaps. That's certainly a long, long resume to work with. Really much too small to bring value as a run defender. I think that kind of rules him out of being a slot corner as the Ravens like to play it. So the Ravens are much happier. Even Ardarius Washington, although smaller, is a very feisty run support player. He's going to give you effort even if he misses a tackle occasionally. Hamilton misses some tackles too, but outstanding take away the strong side of the field guy that you want up front for run defense or for passing. Moore had 12 penalties and 1,778 college coverage snaps, which is another reason to take him out of that slot corner role. You don't want a guy who has that many, that common flags to be in that role. I think he'll be a split field guy if the Ravens draft him. And I think he can be the guy who reads the quarterback well, plays the loose bracket, and also makes some plays downhill when he needs to. But he's my number 10 guy.
Yeah. So for me with Moore, I had him at number 7. I think that for me, what sold him, at least to put him at that spot, is I just think when recognizing routes, I feel like the football IQ, it's really advanced. And I feel like the versatility could really help Baltimore in a lot of different ways. Plus the ball skills are there. And to me, I feel like I felt more comfortable putting him above others because of that in particular.
So when you're talking about recognizing routes, you mean recognizing routes when he's playing on the back end as opposed to when he has the primary coverage?
Like flowing.
Yeah,
flowing to the ball and make like understanding the specifics of the certain routes that he is seeing on the field. Because I think, again, like the size will be a concern. That you mentioned the head injury. I think for me, the big thing that I didn't want to put him higher with is because of it's the size. I mean, the medical history and size that can get you into a dicey situation. I don't like to dock too much because of size, because I feel like, again, if you can play, you can play. Obviously, size will put you in some precarious spots, but I'm not going to like completely take a guy off of my board because of it. I think when you talk about some of the run game limitations that he could have because of that, and when he comes from, you know, more physical blockers, will he be able to disengage from that? I remember early in his career, that's something Patrick Queen struggled with tremendously, just being able to get off of blockers and getting washed out in the run. So I think that if you have a guy that can't be a help in that, it's going to be a much more skill-specific, scheme-specific role, which might limit how he's able to see the field more often than not. So I think he fits more of the skill set that Baltimore needs, but there are those limitations that while I really do like him, it prevented me from putting him higher up.
Yeah, I agree with you specifically on the letting him see the play from the back end. His eyes are probably his most valuable talent. What he does with that in terms of instincts and moving on the football. If he's going to be valuable in the NFL, I think it's got to be a role which minimizes that tackling and maximizes what he can do to find the football.
Yeah.
All right. Outstanding. So he was your number 7 guy. So we're down to your number 9 guy is next.
Yep. My number 9 guy, I have Billy Bowman Jr. out of Oklahoma. He's a guy to me that, again, you look at some of the skill set that Baltimore needs, the ball production is there. His instincts for me, just watching him, really good instincts. I mean, even just jumping, passing lanes, he has great field vision. I thought that watching his hips are super fluid in his movements. I think there's no wasted movement from him, which I really like when I'm scouting safeties and watching tape on these guys. It's, you know, is every move.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in New Jersey. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
With a purpose, and I think Billy Bowman does display that. He has naturalist intuition, and I think that as well the versatility that he brings. I mean, he can play deep. He can also, if you want to put him up at the nickel spot, you can experiment with him at the dime linebacker spot if you want to. He's a tough player as well. Obviously, when I think you look at some of the limitations, I think the size is kind of what jumps off at you here, right around 5'10", 192 in that range. So that's something you're going to have to get. You're going to have to be sold on if you want to take them. I also think the tackling does need improvement. And I think if you want to play in this Baltimore defense, at least the hope is that you're able to tackle well. I think there's some growth that needs to happen in that area. And part of that is he sometimes is over aggressive when pursuing the run game, which can get him into some trouble too. So I think the versatility is there, but you know, some of the tackling is, you know, scares you a little bit.
Okay. So I have Billy Bowman all the way up at number six, and he represents the most extreme case of, I'll give you the ball skills, but I won't give you the tackling. He's had 11 interceptions and 3 touchdowns, returns 251 yards in the past 3 seasons. Big missed tackling problem. His career missed tackle rate is 25.1%. If you look at it year over year, it's like very consistent year by year. Every year has been over 20% missed tackles. His stops to missed tackle ratio this last year was 19 to 15, which was remarkably, was not the worst in the draftable safety group. Career, he's 58 stops and 63 missed tackles. That's not the way. That's not the right side of the ledger to be on. So that's bad. But very limited athletically, in ways other than speed. He runs a 4.42, or at least that's what he was timed at. 5'10", 192, 28.5-inch arms. So we're getting on Malachi Moore for having short arms, right? But Billy Bowman is a full inch and change shorter. He's a regular age for the class. He turned 22 in January, so that's fine. He's been a regular. That's the normal draft age. Is if you're 21, you're young. If you're 23 or older, you're old. Here's the big number that makes Bowman so high on the charts. Last year, he allowed 4.1 yards per target, and that's not even considering the interceptions. Obviously, 79.6 opposition passer rating, career 6.7 yards per target with a 73.2 passer rating. All numbers in that group are outstanding. The interceptions are outstanding. We just mentioned he's had 1,460 college coverage snaps with 5 penalties, and we mentioned the interceptions, which have 11 and 25 other PDs. So remarkable career of ball production for him. Instincts are at the top level. He reads the quarterback extremely well, which extends the range even beyond his speed. And since his speed is good, you really expect with a player like Bowman to get very good single high play that compresses that sideline area even. Normally, you know, when you're playing single high, that single high player is responsible for bracketing coverage on essentially 3/5 of the field, but not outside the numbers. A player with Bowman's speed and reaction, maybe a guy who could actually compress the area outside the numbers at least slightly and be able to help out your cornerback and also make the quarterback a little bit fearful of some of the places he can throw that ball outside of the numbers. So I liked him for that reason. Any position other than free safety will not work for him. You don't want him rushing the passer. You don't want him, you know, trying to play downhill. It's whatever he does downhill for you is a bonus. There will be times when he's put in that position. Obviously, he has to make a tackle, but it's not what you want to do him. His specialty is breaking on the thrown ball between level two and level three. And if you hear me get frustrated with Ravens linebackers and safeties, it's always about that slug of the football field between level two and level three, where a lot of the very high leverage, high value intermediate passing is done in the NFL. And if you have a safety that can truly influence that, or if you're a linebacker who can truly drop and very affect the game in that area, you got pure gold on your hands. So Bowman is a guy I think who can do it. Let's see what I want to say. Does try hard as a tackler, I think, by the way. Just he slides off tackles. He's a twister normally to start with, but he slides off tackles as well. Just can't maintain his grip. Some of that is just length, size, whatever you want to call it. But he's got limitations, and you have to play within those. What else do I have to say about this? You'd have him playing single or too high all the time. I think I've covered that already. If he was a good tackler, if Billy Bowman were a guy who had a 9 or 10% career missed tackle rate, so it wasn't a big negative and it was maybe even a small positive, I think legitimately we'd be talking about him as a first-round pick. But yeah. If he's not that guy, which means he does always put you in jeopardy on the back end. I think the nice thing about it is he's a very cheap option to improve the turnover rate for the Ravens and improve their back end play and also allow for that Hamilton and Washington flexibility. So you bring him in, and I think that they could get him probably in round five or six. They have the last pick of the fifth round. They might not be so fortunate that he's still around, right. But they may as well, and they might even get him in the sixth round. I mean, some people have him lower than that. So I'd be excited about getting him. If he's one of the players on day three, I'm really looking for the Ravens to focus on. I'd be shocked if he's taken on day two.
Yeah, I would too. I could see maybe a team falling in love with him in the mid to late fourth and saying, we love what he can bring to us as a ball hawk, ball skills. We're going to ignore the tackling and bring him in just to do that. Maybe that team is the Ravens. Who knows? But I know that they'd have to maybe do some maneuvering to make that work. Or maybe he'd be available when they pick first in the fourth round or have an opportunity. But I think that for me, I would have loved to have him higher. The tackling was a huge, huge issue. And while he brings the skill set that they need, like you mentioned, it is like the all and then the nothing of the two areas where it's like he has all the ball production, all the skills you want, and exactly fits that need. But the tackling is just so bad where if he's put in that position, you're not going to have a good time. So obviously he's going to get drafted, I think, early to mid day three. I think that's probably the wheelhouse for him. And maybe that team is the Ravens because we know that's the skill set that they need.
They have a lot of picks, so they have a lot of currency to move around on day three. You're really fooling yourself if you think the Ravens can move in and get additional day two picks, but they can move around some on day three, and they might move back, they might move forward, but either way, it might work out to get a player like Bowman. Or, you know, once you're in day three picks, particularly once you get into the 5, 6, and 7 picks, it's okay to reach on a guy because the picks don't have all that much value. So you really the pendulum starts to shift away from value and over to need in those things. Now there's still value picks you can't give up on in round 6 or 7, but there's also need picks that become apparent at that point that it's okay to waste a tiny little bit of draft value on.
Yeah. And I think that if you can get a guy that fits what your skill set is and you have to overpay a little bit in terms of the actual position you take a guy, or if you want to get some extra capital or you want to move up for a guy, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with taking a flyer because once you get into the later parts of day three, and even sometimes on the early parts of day three, you're just taking flyers anyway. So you might as well take it on a guy that has the skills that you need with the ability to, hey, maybe one day he's not going to be the best tackler in the NFL, but he can improve on that enough to the point where maybe he's not a total liability.
Right.
And that I think is more than worth it of a trade-off because the ball skills are still going to be there.
Yeah. Yep, I'm with you. All right, let's move on. I'll go to my number 9 guy, who's Sebastian Castro of Iowa. Fifth, sixth round guy, I would say. 5'11", 203, 459. Arm length is okay for a safety at 30 3/4 inches. He'll be 25 in October after 6 college seasons. So he's one of the guys who's a big risk to be a single contract player. Again, not a problem with a fifth or sixth round pick, but also not an optimal situation because everything contextually that he's done with his grown man strength at at age 23, 24, and 25 to, I'm sorry, 22, 23, and 24 to play against lesser players or players who weren't as physically developed. He's a strong safety slot corner hybrid. His best year came as a junior and it didn't have as good a year as a senior, which is another reason why I have him ranked a little lower. Otherwise, he really would be better than this. Stops to miss tackle ratio of 1.75 to 1. Not great, 21 to 12 in his senior year. Career is 75-32, which is 2.5 to 1 almost. That's much better and more what you want out of a safety. But he's got a 16.2% missed tackle rate for his career. Why do I bring that up specifically? I just gave you 75 to 32. When the denominator of that number of that ratio is so high at 32, it's remarkable because that came as a result of that 16.2% missed tackle rate. It's remarkable that he can get as many stops as he does. So the thing that's attractive about Castro is that he's a really good run fit player and underneath coverage diagnosis guy who can make some immediate sticks, some nice quick tackles after the catch. And that has real value. So you look at that a little differently, not a free safety in the typical sense, at least how I would say it. Yards per target were at 6.1 last year. That's fine. 107.0 opposition passer rating is not. But career, remember, I told you he had a bad year this last year. Career, 4.7 yards per target and 78.8 opposition passer rating is outstanding. So, you know, you have a player who's certainly done some positive things in college. He really hurt himself by not declaring after the 23 draft when he would have been a much hotter property, probably a third round pick, I would have said, could have really made himself some additional money in the NFL. He does have 4 career interceptions. That's something. The big thing, 7 forced fumbles in his college career. Now, that's outstanding for a safety. And we now have hit out on a couple of guys who really have a lot of ball production coming in the form of forced fumbles or fumble recoveries. I think Castro might have 7 forced fumbles and none recovered. It was some weird combination like that. So he's great at being the second man of the ball, prying it loose. And that's the really hard thing. The forced fumbles are the higher contribution to that equation. So very positive. It'll be a special teams player, no problem. For the Ravens, he's an age and fit concern. The Ravens need a half field player. That's really not what Castro would be strong as. He might be able to play that role, but he's better suited to be a dime back. And the Ravens are frankly flush with other options, whether it's Kane or Hamilton or any number of other guys they could draft with a pick that would not even be as high as Castro. So while I like Castro and I enough to put him ahead of Malachi Moore, for example, I couldn't put him way up on my list just because of the fit concern.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. For me, Castro was number 8, so we're not too far off on where we have him. And I think we're generally of the same mindset. I agree where the Ravens just need a different skill set there. And while I think that age is something I looked at as probably he would be a one contract or maybe a guy that you bring back on a 1-year deal after his rookie contract and then see what happens there. Maybe like a Malik Harris and what they did with him last year before obviously he went off to Pittsburgh this offseason. But I think the things that I like about Castro, he brings that linebacker mentality to the way that he tackles. I mean, he drops his hips really well. He drives through contacts. One of the things I liked was that he also sniffs out screens really well. Baltimore's defense has been very poor at sniffing out screens. They've had better moments over the last couple of seasons, but I think that having a guy that can just say, hey, I'm going to drive in on this or has the instincts to say, I see this coming in the screen game is really important. They've gotten better at it again, but still you'd like them to improve in that. But you're right. I mean, he has limited long speed. You know, it's not like that shows up a little bit, particularly when he has to play man or if he's ever asked to be in that position where, you know, if he's matched up against the slot guy, just in the position that he is, that guy, if he's shifty enough, probably would create some separation there. I just think that a lot of the themes that we see with some of these guys that are going to be 5th, 6th round picks is they do get over aggressive in their tackling as well, which again, him as a tackler, I like that aspect of his game. There's still a little bit he can clean up about it though, which you talked about, Ken, but I think at the end of the day, he's someone that I would still feel like why I had, for example, a Malachi Moore above him is because I think that the skill set need is, and I actually toyed with flipping Billy Bowman and Castro because of the skill set need that Baltimore has, where it's like Sanker and Castro, they fit a need that, yeah, sure, Baltimore could use another guy like that, but they need a ball hawk much more. Mm-hmm. So I think that Castro, maybe if he had a different skill set, was better as a ball hawk guy, I'd have him a little higher up on my list. But because he's not that guy, I have him at number 8. Still a good player, though. I still like him.
All right. Fair enough. So we'll move up to number 8. And your number 8 guy was Castro. Was Castro. So I guess it's my number 8 guy. And that's Caleb Ransaw of Tulane. 5'11", 197, 4'33", 40. So blazing speed. 30¾-inch arm. So plenty long there. Don't know his age, by the way. He might be an older player. I do not have that. Speed and great jumps. He's a little small to be a safety at 5'11", 197. Not terribly small, but a little on the smaller side. You're like 6 feet, 205, you know, kind of there. And those last 8 or 10 pounds, they do matter. I mean, they really do in terms of, of how fast that safety is moving when he makes a tackle. In terms of his stops to missed tackle ratio, last year, 13-3, 4.33. So that's outstanding. And really, that's a great low missed tackle rate, which is driving that. Career, now this is fantastic, 43 stops and 7 missed tackles, a 5.4% career missed tackle rate, and a 6.1 ratio of stops to missed tackles. So those are defensive wins he's providing as opposed to missed tackles. It's tremendously valuable. Now, he has played a lot of slot and a lot of strong safety, has really been his hybridized roles. He's been a closer to the line of scrimmage, what we kind of think of Hamilton as being prior to 2024, as really having that hybridized role. And a lot of other people like the Honey Badger and players like that would fall into that same category. And a lot of the draftable players, but he's not ideal at slot corner. He has a fairly high penalty rate, career 6 in 797 coverage snaps. He would improve that a lot if he were playing back to front, because I think his instincts are very good. Translates his tackling well to special teams. I don't think that's going to be a problem at all. And here's the other thing. At slot corner, sometimes you have a guy who's accused as not having the change of direction speed. And this is one thing I saw, but I did not specifically observe. And I would have preferred to specifically observe this. The problem is they don't give you, here's every bad play this guy made in a year. They either give you single game complete cutups, which are great. That's the way you really want to do your scouting. Or they give you every highlight play, which has some value, but it's not the way I want to do my scouting. It's the worst way to do it. So what they don't ever give you is, here's all the touchdown passes he allowed, or here's all the bad plays he made. But the accusation is that he can't find the football in the air. I think the Ravens have really had enough of that with Stevens and JAD currently at corner. And the way you fix that is you have him looking at the quarterback and playing back to front. And then that hopefully would not be an issue anymore. I think he'd be a fine split field player for the Ravens. If I didn't believe he'd fit in there, then I wouldn't have had him as high as I did, but he's number 8 on my list.
I had him at number 11, a lot of, for the reason of, for me, the man coverage stuff, more shifty guys that we kind of talked about with Castro, and, you know, the limited ball production was another. You know, he just had the one interception in college, and the big thing was turning his head for the ball. I mean, I kind of agree with you where I just don't know if the Ravens want to bring in another guy with that. I mean, I think they were burned by Brandon Stevens enough in big moments. Now, again, I'm not expecting Ransaw, if he was drafted, to come in and play all of Brandon Stevens' snaps. Obviously, that's going to get, you know, dollied out among a bunch of other players. But I think that for a guy in Ransaw, who does have, he has ability. I mean, he talked about it. I mean, as a tackler, he brings thunder. I mean, I think that's the way that I would describe it. The speed is intriguing to me. The potential for Ransaw is someone that I can see as a guy that comes into the league, couple of years of the, almost like what they expected that what to happen with Jalen Armour Davis, where he needed a little bit of refinement, but injuries have really taken JAD's career away from him at this point. If Ransaw can stay healthy, maybe he turns into the final form of JAD that the Ravens never got because of the injury. So I could see it that way, where if they just want to cut bait with JAD and say, hey, we're going to replace you with Ransaw and this is going to be our new project, I could see that happening. But I just think with the skill set and him not turning his head for the ball, or at least having trouble with that, I had him at number 11 because the talent and potential is obviously there. But I just don't know if that's a skill set Baltimore wants to play with anymore.
Yeah, it's certainly, they have a lot of players who play a strong safety, slot corner, hybrid role. Other teams don't have one, but the Ravens have 3.
Yeah,
and so it's really not a reasonable place for them to look specifically for his skill set. And then once you realize it's a different skill set you need, it's a question of, well, wait a minute, how does this guy fit the skill set we need? And then you have to really ask yourself that question. Number seven for you?
Number seven for me was Malachi Moore.
Okay, so we already did him. So we're down to my number seven guy. I get to go first again. That's how it sometimes flips on you after,
right.
after a couple of times here. My number seven guy is Jordan Hancock of Ohio State. I like him. I'll give this away. I like him the better of the two Ohio State safeties. And one of the good things is you watch every play from those games and you can see a lot of how they're both playing on the play. Particularly that Texas game is one that's available out there. I see Hancock as another guy who's fairly cheap value in round five, round six for the Ravens. I think he could be available then. 6'0", 195, 442, 40. And that's a pro day measurement. So we will treat it with the jaundiced eye it deserves. 30 3/4 inch arms. He'll be 22 in August, so on the younger side, but not super young. Outstanding vertical and broad jumps really show the explosiveness. You want that on the back end. You want to have the combination of the instincts and processing you need to know where you need to go, and then the explosiveness to get out of the blocks very quickly and get there. And so I'm always happy when I see that. His stops to missed tackle ratio was 3.6 last year, 18 to 5, which is very good. Career 31 to 15, not as good, but a little over 2-1. He had a 9.1% missed tackle rate in 2024, which was an enormous improvement over 17.2% for his previous years in college football. So kind of have to wonder about sample size in 2024, but on the other hand, it's such a big improvement in rate. You got to give him credit for that too. There may have been development. Overall, his stops to miss tackle are okay for his career anyway. Where he really shines is in the other coverage metrics, yards per target and opposition passer rating. 5.2 yards per target this last year, 6.0 career, 71.2% opposition passer rating, and 69.4 for career. So all four of those numbers are outstanding. Why do I keep giving you yard per target number and opposition passer rating? Here's the central reason. I want to have traits and measurables that are corroborated by outstanding coverage statistics at the college level. You're playing with a lower level of competition, even playing in the Big Ten and the SEC, whatever it might be, it's still lower than the NFL. And your outstanding characteristics that are supposed to make you great at the NFL level, they better have made you great at the college level. And so that's why I focus on those statistics. Nate Wiggins was kind of an ideal intersection of outstanding measurables with fantastic college coverage metrics last year. And that's why he was my number one corner overall over some other guys that a lot of other people liked more than that. But really happy the Ravens were able to get him. Continuing on with Hancock, though, he's penalized four times in 428 coverage snaps in 24. That was a lot, but I think previous in his career, he had not had many or any. Let's see, showed up big in the game against Texas. Now this game, he had seven tackles in the game. He's targeted six times for 9 total yards in that Texas game. So you can bet that since that's one of the games I had available to watch, that for both those Ohio State safeties, it's probably going to take a disproportionate portion of my total viewpoint on these guys.
Right.
He's not really a change of direction guy. He did improve, as I said, as a tackler. Instincts are good. I think he's a half field guy. Core special teamer as well. I like him a lot more than most analysts. Almost every analyst you'll find out there would have Hancock second of the two Ohio State safeties. I'm just the opposite. I think Hancock is the better guy, the better fit for the Ravens, and the better player. And that's where I have him.
Yeah, I did 16 safeties just so we could have some buffer room. I had him at number 13, and the reason, you know, I like, he was a clutch player too. I mean, I know that, you know, some of those big games, it seemed like he was in those moments over and over and over again. For me, I think that there is some refinement, especially when he does get a little bit grabby. And I know the Ravens have they have Marlon Humphrey is a grabby player. They have grabby players in their secondary. But I think to me, sometimes in the run game, what I saw was he sometimes struggled to disengage at times, something that we talked about some of the other players as well. But I'll tell you, he's someone that you can put in a lot of different positions and he can play really well. I don't think there are a lot of safeties to me that fall into that like day three category that can be pretty interchangeable. And for the skill set that the Ravens need, you know, you talk about maybe some zone coverage that they need. He is able to kind of read the field really well. I think that he closes cushion in a huge hurry. Like he's someone that just gets down to the ball, and the athletic level traits that he can bring, if you're going to put him in the, like a nickel example, that can help out in versatility moments. So I like Hancock. Didn't crack my top 10, but someone that I could certainly see Baltimore drafting.
All right. Well, fair enough. Let's see. We've named your entire top seven and my entire, sorry, 7 through 10. Yeah. So we'll break it here. We'll come back for the second show. But Kevin, let's talk about what you're working on now on Locked On Ravens and where people can find your content online.
Yeah, you can find me over on Locked On Ravens. We're a 5-day a week Ravens podcast over there. So doing the daily Ravens podcast grind, much like Ken is. And we have all the draft content coming your way over there. Obviously, we're breaking down positions. We're diving into how the Ravens have approached their free agency, which will obviously factor into how they mold this draft class. And we also, whenever the Ravens have a big piece of news that drops, we go live over on YouTube and talk about it. We're available in video form and in audio form wherever you get your podcast. So if you want more daily Ravens coverage outside of film study, be sure to come over, check out Locked On Ravens.
All right. Fair enough. Other folks out there, reminding everybody to join us on draft night. And that means all three nights for us. We watch the entire draft. It's something Maureen and I started doing a long time ago, and I just have a romantic weekend now. She's kind of bummed about it because now I do it on air here, and she's kind of excluded in a lot of ways. I'm going to see if we can get her on air for part of this. But it's a lot of fun. It is really interesting perspectives on the Ravens draft from a lot of people that you know from the podcast community, from other people and guests on my show, local people we have come through for a half hour per time for some of the broadcasters and whatnot. But it's a great group watch party. And the big thing we're going for is not tipping picks and having the organic experience of finding out these picks at the same time, which is a great deal of fun. And we work on a spreadsheet together as we do this to like kind of eliminate the players who are left and then kind of analyze as each player rolls off the board, particularly day one and day two in particular, how that changes the texture of the board for the Ravens. Do they have to then prioritize some other position group and whatnot? I think you'll find that extremely fun if you give it a chance. And it's a color-coded thing that ends up being quite a parking lot puzzle to solve as you work your way through the draft. Anyway, Kevin, thanks very much for joining me for part one. I'll talk to you again in a few minutes on part two.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
A lot of products say they're clean, but what does that mean? Ritual has high standards for what clean means, like their essential prenatal multivitamin, which is heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and GMO-free. It features key mom-to-baby nutrients like folate, choline, and omega-3. Clean isn't clean enough, especially during pregnancy. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 21 plus only, must be physically located in New Jersey. T&Cs apply.